remember when you were my man.
It's hip hop, blues, reggae, jazz, opera, roots, curry, or world music you're into. 3CR's music menu is serving it up to you.
With Music Sans Frontières, music from around Australia and around the world.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Great Voices.
You're all listening to Hits is the Hop on 3CR 855 AM.
Music matters on 3CR, 12 noon every Friday.
Keep these diverse tunes on the air by subscribing to 3CR. Call 9419 8377.
The newspaper shout, a new style is growing.
In 2016, 3CR published a book to celebrate the station's 40th birthday.
Years in the making, Radical Radio, celebrating 40 years of 3CR, is a visually stunning account of the people and ideas that make up this dynamic station.
At 300 pages, the book includes hundreds of images and over 50 features on programs, people, music and technology from across the decades.
3CR's Radical Radio book is now on sale for just $30.
You can get your copy of 3CR's book at the station during business hours at 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy.
Or online at 3cr.org.au/shop.
Get a piece of your own history.
On sale for just $30.
3CR's Radical Radio is available now.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome to a rambling virologist dream on this bright sunny day, the 3rd of January on 3CR.
Most LGBT...
Now, it's on...
Most LGBTIQ people...
Just play it through and I'll get Leanne to come.
Most LGBTIQ people experience positive, intimate, and family relationships. However, like cisgendered heterosexual people, some LGBTIQ people experience abuse and violence in their relationships. With Respect is a new family violence service for LGBTIQ plus Victorians, providing counseling and recovery programs for victims and survivors of family violence and help for people using violence who want to stop. With Respect is a partnership between Queer Space, Thorn Harbour Health, Switchboard Victoria and Transgender Victoria. For more information, visit withrespect.org.au or call 1800 542 847. With Respect is not a crisis service. If you need immediate help, call 000.
A 3CR supporter.
Yep, good afternoon and welcome to a rambling brotherly stream on this sunny day in Melbourne, the 3rd of January, and Happy New Year to everyone. Now, just before the new year started, I recorded an interview with Melina Wick from the Angus Project. And we're going to play that first of you to you. Melina Wink is among the writers for the Angus Project. And we're going to take that interview right now. Good afternoon and welcome to a Rambling Brology stream. My name is Rafael Caleb, and on today's show I am speaking with Melina Winks from the Angus Project. Welcome to a Rambling Brology stream on the 3rd of January. How are you doing today, Melina?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you. Now, is that you've been a writer for the Angus Project and that premiered on the 4th of January, and you're a comedy writer. Would you like to tell us about your involvement with the Angus Project?
Sure. Well, I worked with Nina on a few different projects in the past, and we worked together on A Taste of Election Show and Nightly, and when she made the original Angus Project web series, I was telling her about the beginning of this year, or last year by 2019, was telling her how much I enjoyed the web series, and when she got the go-ahead to move to a pilot stage, she asked me to come on board as an additional writer, and I was very excited to do so.
And how did you actually originally meet Nina? Nina, are you?
We worked together on a few shows in the sort of news comedy space. So I think the first one was Chase's Media Circus, which was a few years ago now, and then later on Chaser Election Desk, and most recently on Tonightly. So we were both working on the Tonightly with Tom Ballard show at the time that we started working together on Angus Project as well.
Right, it's because, for example, is that Angus and Nina originally met each other, I think it was at the Charles Sturt University. I thought it might have gone back to university days too.
No, it was working together on different sort of shows in TV, but this is the first time we've worked together on a narrative comedy show, and kind of the first time we've worked together directly. So we've both worked on the same shows at the same time, and that's sort of how we became friends and got a sense that we were sort of had people who might work well together on a project. But this was really the first time really working the two of us together very closely on one particular project.
Now, is that, Melina, you mentioned the term there saying a narrative comedy. What actually is a narrative comedy?
So the space that we'd worked together before was sort of on political comedy. You know, you have entertainment shows, so shows like Tonightly and Chaser where, you know, it has jokes and it's written, but it's written about the news or written about other kind of factual things, whereas with a narrative comedy, you know, you're creating characters, you're creating the world, you're creating the story, and so you're really telling a story in that type of comedy, and it's quite different in terms of the process that you use to write it. And so it was a bit of an adjustment, but that's really what we got to work together on.
Yep. Now, is it developing some of the storylines for the Angus Project, was that difficult, or was it sitting down with Angus and Nina talking about what was going on and whether how they'd like it said, how it would unfold?
One of the big decisions we had to make in the process of writing it was what was going to be different and what was going to be the same for the pilot versus the web series. So for the web series, that was three short episodes, and the pilot is a half-hour show, you know, with a view to hopefully getting picked up to a full series of half-hour episodes. And so there were certain things that we knew we wanted to keep the same from the original web series, which is the relationship between Nina and Angus, that they were best friends, and Nina was also Angus's carer, that they lived in Bathurst and they liked to party. Those were the kind of untouchable elements from the original. But then a lot of the work that we did together working on the show was figuring out what do we change to create characters that have storylines that can evolve going forward. So, you know, we still wanted Nina and Angus to be very into partying, but, you know, you can't have half an hour every week just people partying. So that's where we started working on, you know, what are these characters' goals? What do they want out of life? What are the kinds of things that they can do that would generate stories in a longer series? And so in terms of the process of writing it, we didn't actually start writing the script until very late in the process, really in the last couple of weeks of about 3 months of getting together once a week to work on it. So the process leading up to that point was really brainstorming as many different things as we could, sort of casting the net as wide as possible, all the different kinds of things that they could do, and sort of stress testing all those ideas. So, you know, we'd start with, you know, what are 10 different goals that Angus could have and Nina could have, and then we'd take some of them out and think, okay, what are 10 different storylines that we could generate out of those types of characters. And in doing that, you found a lot of things that maybe seem funny at first aren't necessarily sustainable over a full series. So it could be a really funny idea for one show, but then there's nothing you can do with it beyond that. You can't take it anywhere. So really the bulk of the time of the work was really thinking through and testing and doing all kinds of sort of exercises to figure out what are the kinds of traits of these characters and things that these characters could want to do with their lives that would generate lots of stories moving forward.
Yeah, sure. Look, is that with the Angus project, look, there are some very, very interesting characters in there. Like Angus, for sure, is one of them with the party lifestyle. Nina as kind of like the high school or university dropout come carer then. Then there's a couple of teenage girls that were in it. Wizza, who is a Paralympic there. There was a lady that was on reception who was working at the function which Wizza was hosting as a public speaker. There was the journalist, and like they've all got a variety of personalities there, and there was some very breaking of stereotypes through them. What do you think?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, part of the work as well that we put into developing the show and hopefully a full series was not just figuring out who are Angus and Nina and what are their sort of character traits and where would we get comedy from that, but also developing the world that they live in. So, as I said, you know, we knew we wanted to keep it in Bathurst and sort of keep the core of what their sort of lifestyle is like, but, you know, we also want to bring in characters to surround them with that could create new storylines and generate conflict. So, for example, Kath, the person who runs the disability services, WeCare, you know, we set up a relationship between her and Nina where, you know, they're kind of enemies in a way. And, you know, we would imagine going forward that Kath and Nina would be constantly sort of butting heads, and Kath is trying to get Nina in trouble because she's always sort of breaking the rules and just getting away with it. And similarly, the character of Ron at the newspaper, when we decided we wanted to make Angus an aspiring sports journalist, an important part of that as well was, okay, well, who is the character who works at the newspaper and what is their relationship like? And, you know, hopefully if the show does go to series, we'll have a lot of opportunities to develop those other characters around Angus and Nina as well.
Yeah, sure. And I was a willing prisoner when I actually saw the first episode. Is that I saw it on iView about 10 days before it went to air, wrote a review about that. Because, like, as a writer, is that I was fascinated about the interplay about the Angus Project seemed to make a lot of statements about disability, challenging community attitudes, and breaking stereotypes. Was that an intentional part of being a writer, Milena?
Well, definitely. I mean, for Angus Project, going back to the original web series, it really came out of Angus and Nina's life together. And I wasn't involved in the original web series, but when I watched that, I had the same experience that you're talking about as a viewer, of being really impressed to see something that's so different from what we've seen on TV in really any other show in Australia. And so I think, you know, what's so exciting about it is that it comes from a real place. And it's actually showing, you know, obviously we fictionalized parts of it, but, you know, a lot of the core of the show comes from experiences and the sort of life that Angus and Nina have had. And so I think that's, you know, a big part of making it feel really authentic on screen and showing people an experience that's actually based in reality rather than based on sort of cliches of what people think people with disabilities can do. And another thing that was important in the pilot was creating the character of Wizza so that it wasn't just, you know, we have Angus representing the whole community of people with disabilities and that's all on his shoulders, you know, to sort of show there is, you know, as much variety in personalities and people amongst people with disabilities as there is for anybody else. So, you know, Angus obviously at heart is a really sweet and lovable character, but having the character of Wizza, the Paralympian, who sort of generates a lot of the storyline in the pilot, be such a jerk was a very intentional thing to sort of have just the full range of character types and disability element to be almost kind of irrelevant in the storytelling.
For example, with the contrast between Wizza and Angus, look, it very much reminds me of, let's say, in terms of, let's say, Angus coming across as Superman, here I am, this is what I do, and I do the very best that I can. And to me, the character of
Wizza was very much like the Joker in, let's say, Batman and Robin, for example. Yeah. Like the really bad dude, I am evil, I will get you, and this is what I will do.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we still wanted to set up, you know, the things which make a narrative comedy show exciting, which is, you know, having the drama and the conflict and the comedy, heightening all the characters beyond their everyday lives. And certainly while, you know, there are elements that are based on Angus and Nina's real experiences in Bathurst, we also obviously amped it up for comedy and drama. But, you know, definitely the show has at its heart a representation of a person with a disability. And having that sort of ethos throughout the show was really important. And to having that represented through all different kinds of characters rather than just Angus alone and sort of putting that burden of representation on his shoulders alone was very important.
My name is Ruby Susan Mountford. My pronouns are they.
You're listening to 3CR Radical Radio, and that was Bin Day with Stella, Rosie and Claudia on...
Hello, I'm Liz Wright. Welcome to Are You Looking At Me? And International Day for People with Disability. Today on the show, we meet Trish Maloney and Frank Horbentic, who are some of the oldest characters.
Did you miss our 12-hour special broadcast for International Day of People with a Disability? Radical disabled programmers discuss the NDIS, Aboriginal rights, creativity, youth access, financial security, parenting, LGBTIQ, intersections, and so much more. Head to 3cr.org.au/Disability Day 2018 and listen back anytime.
Sonic Agenda presents Ra Ra, a feminist punk rock retrospective of Melbourne, from the Wet Ones to Wetfest, happening across Spiegel Tent and the Tote, January 12th. Daytime panels with Claire Moore, Sarah Hardiman, Sue Shaw, Karina Yutomo, plus more. Nighttime show includes Terrible Truths, Moody Beaches, Laser Tits, Mace, and Rock and Roll High School Band Reunions. Tickets at thetotehotel.com, supported by Creative Victoria and City of Yarra.
A 3CR supporter.
Now, as a writer, is it difficult to separate yourself from the expectations of what the community actually thinks and does and how you think a storyline can develop, or if there's a social change, how you may incorporate that into a storyline?
It can be. I think that in this instance, we were very conscious of wanting to represent Bathurst in a way that wasn't seen as making fun of the town, you know, to sort of take elements of real life and incorporate it into the show, but in a way that is also thoughtful and not sort of saying something we're not meaning to say. But also, I mean, having worked a lot in the news comedy space, something that's very liberating about working in a narrative comedy context is that you are kind of relieved of a lot of the burden of having to think about, you know, what you're saying about real world events, because you get the joy of making stuff up, so you can make up these characters and have them do whatever you want them to do and interact in ways you want them to interact and create a kind of world, even though it's set in a real place like Bathurst, you know, create a world within that world that is fictional. And it's quite liberating and fun to play with something that you've created yourself rather than, you know, in the sort of news space, you obviously have to be very careful about, you know, how you're talking about real world events that affect real people.
Yeah, because look, most authors do have their... The disclaimer is that it's a coincidence between any resemblance between real people, real time. They are only meant as a guideline to set the time and space of an event. And
yeah.
I say that in a lot of books. I understand why it's actually in there, and that's a good point about portraying Bathurst in a very authentic, in an authentic manner. For example, a lot of country or ruralish towns, they do have the country newspaper. They may actually have, let's say, a person like Wizard, the motivational speaker, and then that person, a president, may have a chance to actually meet someone who is actually there here. I mean, is it it's well put together, that kind of idea?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Yeah, and I think that, you know, while obviously something that is very obvious about Angus Project is that it is a representation of disability, which is something we don't see very often on Australian television, I think also something that we don't see as much as we could is representation of rural Australia. And to actually kind of set it out there in Bathurst and to be based on, you know, real first-hand experience of living in that town. Nina lived there during university and Angus still lives there now, grew up in Bathurst. You know, I think obviously while, you know, like we're setting all these crazy things in this world, there is like a real love for the place at its heart. And, you know, we sort of, I think getting a sort of a view of regional Australia in there was also something that we were conscious. It's not something you see on every show and is a strength of Angus Project.
Oh, look, it is. It's that I'm spreading the wings a fair bit, and that's, in cliché terms. Like, for example, is that I'm trying to think back about what shows have actually been on television with a rural theme. Is that, for example, you had the James Herriot. There was the James Herriot series a long, 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 long time ago. All Creatures Great and Small. There was a Country Practice. And I'm just trying to think about other ones that readily spring to mind. I can't think of too many of them. It's been maybe things like MASH that was set across in Korea. And I see that as a narrative storytell is, that's one of them. Let's say Neighbours, that's set in main part of Melbourne across, I think it's Nunawading and Glen Waverley, the views you got that across there. So to have a TV series around rural Australia, which is a comedy there, it is a very unusual setting.
Yeah, and they did film it there, and a lot of locals worked on the film as well. And so, you know, it's nice to kind of embrace Bathurst and feel embraced back in terms of, you know, people getting around the project.
And how did the locals, when they say that the locals embraced the Angus Project, so they got caught up in a bit of the hype, or were they generally excited that there was going to be at least one episode featuring Bathurst?
Yeah, well, like I say, it was filmed there, and people who live in Bathurst, you know, made up a large portion of people who worked on the show, both behind the scenes and on camera. And, you know, certainly, like, the local media got behind it and brought attention to it. So it was really nice to see that you know, people who actually live in that community saw this was a project that, you know, doesn't represent, obviously, every experience of living in Bathurst, but, you know, is a positive depiction of that area.
Oh, I said I'm going to own up to this one. I haven't actually been to Bathurst, the actual town, but based on the rural towns that I have, and I've gone to quite a lot of them around Victoria, is that I could see a similarity between things like Bathurst and other places too.
Mm.
Okay, but let's say from the wider community, is that as a writer, how would you actually prepare for, let's say, people are going to watch the Angus Project, they're going to read about it. How do you prepare if there's, let's say, negative feedback or criticism? Or how do you actually handle it, approach it?
Well, I mean, I have to say it's been quite remarkable just how positive the feedback has been. It's been really, really lovely. Just, you know, pretty much everything I've seen has been really positive. And that's been, you know, I kind of always like to brace myself for bad things to happen. So when good things happen, it's a really lovely surprise. Not that I thought that it would get bad reviews, but just to see the extent of which people are writing about it and talking about it and how positive it's been has been quite overwhelming. You know, I think if anyone doesn't like it, you know, comedy can be very subjective and everyone likes their own sort of thing, and that's fine. But honestly, I really couldn't be more thrilled with how it's been received. It's been really fantastic.
Oh, look, I said it certainly has. It's that with some of the online communities I'm involved in, is that Carly Finlay mentioned that the Angus Project was going to air. She's a very strong supporter, advocate for disability rights, especially from a creativity point of view, and changing community standards. That's on how I heard about the Angus Project, and a lot of that community, which was part of that discussion, they were very excited it was coming to air, and they couldn't wait to actually see that. And that was led me to the interest I had in the Angus Project. I thought, gee whiz, if people are saying this and they're excited, well, I better make sure that I watch this and see where it does go to.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that's so funny about it is that we really started writing it at the beginning of 2018. We wrote it over a 3 or 4 month period, and then we filmed it, and doing post-production, and by the time it actually went to air, it was nearly a year since we started working on it. And so there was, and especially for me not being involved in the filming component, there was a big gap between finishing writing it and it going to air for the public. And it's been just this really lovely surprise in a way to sort of, you know, have worked on something, you know, a few months back and kind of know that it's going to come out at some point, but started working on other things, and then suddenly it's out and everybody's watching it and responding so well. It's just this really lovely way to finish a year.
Well, it's that, well, my news is wishes for Christmas. It's this time of the year, or was for Christmas. Was that the Angus project? Is that the Diz developed into a nice big series, let's say between 12, 14 episodes minimum over the first 6 months of, let's say, 2019 or late 2019? So the public can actually get a better, more of an insight. I think it's got a lot of potential, the Angus project, on how it was put together.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, a lot of the work that we did and most of the time that we spent working on it was not geared towards the pilot episode per se, but geared towards the whole series. So as I was saying, you know, a lot of the work we were doing was developing the characters and developing the world so that if we did get beyond the pilot stage, we would have the groundwork all there for a long series. And you know, that was, you know, the main sort of changes we made between the original web series and the pilot was trying to lay that groundwork. And, you know, while then obviously we tried very hard to put, you know, as much as we could into the pilot episode and make that entertaining and funny and interesting for everybody, definitely we put a lot of work as well into trying to create characters and create an environment where if we do get to go to series, there's lots of potential for a whole bunch of fun stories and interesting ways for the characters to develop and interact with each other. And, you know, it really has the potential to grow into a long story that we could tell. So, you know, hopefully we'll get the opportunity. And if it does, if we are lucky enough to get the opportunity to go to series, certainly that work has been done to really prepare us to do a lot with it.
Yep, certainly. Like the Angus, I mean, it, the Angus project is on the ABC Comedy Channel. Now, it's part of a, I think it falls under the umbrella of called Fresh Blood.
Yeah.
Now, I think you've been, I think you were originally involved with Fresh Blood in 2015.
So that was Nina's original web series, and I wasn't involved in the original. But the way the Fresh Blood program works is that they have initially quite a lot. It was over 20 groups that make a web series, so three episodes of an idea. And they're sort of all in the 10-minute range approximately. And then of those, that big, large group, four were selected at the end of 2017 to go to pilot stage to make a half-hour pilot. And Angus Project was one of those. And as part of that, you get a bit more resources and things like that. So that's when Nina was able to bring me on to be involved with the writing and developing of the pilot. And then of that, we believe, I think, one of those go to a full series. So we're at the stage now where four pilots have been made and gone to air. They're all very good. I've watched them all. I enjoyed them all a lot. So, you know, it's going to be tough, but hopefully we might be lucky enough to go to full series after that.
Okay, well, let's say if people wanted to actually get in contact, let's say, with the ABC and give the Angus Project a nice big plug saying, look, this is the one we really want to go to air. How could, what's the best ways for people to do those sort of things?
The ABC website will have a contact section that will give phone numbers and an email address, and that might be the best way because it will have the numbers for all the different states. But if ABC is very good at taking requests and complaints and feedback down, and it does get passed on, so absolutely, you know, as much as people can get behind it, it would be really fantastic.
Well, as I said, I'm going to do a little bit of research there because that might be one of the links that I'll try to get put onto when this becomes embedded audio for people to listen to it at their own leisure after we go to air on air. And that's a way of making sure that they can keep the Angus Project in the public's eye, in front of the people that are the decision makers about what the Australian public might like to see, both here and overseas too.
Absolutely.
And part of, like, as a writer, is that how did you actually begin as a writer, though?
Well, I studied filmmaking at university, and from there my first job in TV was actually as a researcher on a show called The New Inventors about 10 years ago. And I worked in various roles like researching and producing for a couple of years. And then I started working on shows where I was initially a researcher. I started contributing jokes and ideas for for the writers, and it first on a show called Tractor Monkeys, and got my first writing credit there. And from there, I worked on The Roast, which was a daily news comedy show in 2014. And from there, it just kind of became the full-time gig. So, yeah, it started, it's sort of unusual. A lot of people start in stand-up comedy, but I don't really come from a performance background. So it was more starting in other roles in television and then sort of throwing in ideas for jokes and just sort of trying to show people this is the thing I could do as well. And from there, it sort of became a full-time gig.
I said, I'm very, very pleased. It's always interesting that actually turned out that way. It's interesting for people to find out what people's backgrounds is that when you're working with a team, is that a director I was speaking to a couple of years ago, she actually said to me that when she's part of a team, she likes to work with people from different backgrounds and experiences from what she's had. Do you think there's any benefit in the creative process that if people come from the same background and they're working towards one thing, or is it better to actually have people from contrasting backgrounds?
I absolutely think it's really important to have people from contrasting backgrounds because, you can kind of fall into a certain set of assumptions or a way of thinking, and just to kind of have that creative spark of people disagreeing and talking things out and throwing in ideas that you never would have thought of, it just helps you to get to a more original place. And, there's nothing I hate more than lazy joke writing. And, I just definitely think that the key to creativity is having different and new ideas. And I think the best way to do that is to get lots of different ideas and different perspectives in a room together to come up with something that's really new. So, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, it is. It's like having Melina, the comment you made about a lot of people start in the performance background and then they actually move to the writing is that Alistair Baldwin, for example, is a person that was a state finalist in the National Raw Comedy Competitions in 2016. Mm-hmm. And then he ended up working on the ABC as a screenwriter for, I think it was Get Cracked, and that was announced earlier this year.
But also The Weekly. I worked with Alistair on The Weekly this year, which was really fantastic. Alistair's a great writer.
Oh, look, he is. Is that Alistair's a very creative person and very diverse of two. And, from a point of view of trying to develop the comedy or storylines, can you give listeners maybe about a 30-second spiel about how you might develop about writing comedy?
Well, depending on what kind of comedy you want to get into, certainly for the news comedy space, I would say whatever way that you can work on your writing and develop your writing and then find a way to get that noticed is great. A lot of people do it through stand-up, but it's also possible to do it through, as I say, coming up through other lines in television. I think the most important thing is to find a way to make sure that you are writing and are improving your craft all the time. For me, working on a daily show with The Roast in 2014 was really important because it gave me opportunity to be constantly writing every single day. And that's the only way you can learn is by actually doing it. And it's the same for narrative comedy. Actually doing it and figuring out what you're doing wrong and how to get better is the only way to go.
Oh, well, is it? Thank you very much for your time, Melina. Is that it's been great talking to you as a writer from the Angus Project, and we hope that the Angus Project is picked up as a project in the future.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And we've been talking with Melina Wicks from the Angus Project, one of the writers. Thank you very much for your time, Melina. Now, we're going to play a song before the next interview called This Is Who We Are. We're going to take that right now and keep listening to A Rambling Biologist's Dream for more discussion about the Angus Project.
That's right, people. We are people just like you. We are somebody. We are people with hopes and dreams. We are individuals. We are not there to be judged by what we look like and what we wear. We are people, man. Personalities just like you, man. How I feel, what is real, who I am.
I want the world to see me, yeah.
Show the world who I am. so myself who I am.
That made me feel happy.
How I feel, what is real, who I am.
I like to do singing.
Show the world who I am. Show myself who I am.
Welcome back to A Rambling Brologist Dream on the 3rd of January. My name is Rafael Caleb, and we're talking about the Angus Project, and I've got a very special guest in the studio at the moment, a lady called Rosie. Welcome to A Rambling Brologist Dream, Rosie.
Thank you very much.
Now, Rosie, what did you think of the... Have you ever seen the Angus Project?
Yes, after panelling for you last time, I thought I must get onto this. I must watch the Angus Project. I thought it was fantastic. I loved every moment of it. I thought it was really funny.
Well, I was a willing prisoner of the Angus Project. I mean, I think I could have actually been in solitary confinement and I would have been extremely happy.
Mm.
Now, is it, with the Angus Project, it's not very often that a show has actually got a person with a disability in the actual TV series. Can you think of anyone?
Yeah, I thought of AJ Barker from the show True Blood. What's that show called? Breaking Bad. There it is.
Well, it's kind of like it's. I'm trying to actually think back, and I can't actually place a show where any of the cast is played has actually got a disability. I've seen a few films where people have got a disability, like Defiant Lives comes to one, but that's actually a documentary.
Yeah.
But as far as TV goes, I don't remember seeing a person with disability on a TV series. Can
Yeah, I think actually I just thought of another one. The girl that played Becky in Glee, she had Down syndrome and she was a fantastic character. But then they also had this other character called, I think, Archie or something. And he was meant to be in a wheelchair, but he wasn't really disabled in real life.
So. Yeah, and look, that's actually a really important point you brought up there, Rose, is that when a character is actually written who has got a disability, 99.98% of the cases, it is actually played by a person without a disability. And what makes the Angus Project great is Angus, who does have a disability, is actually played by Angus, who does actually have a disability too. Mm. It's a great little bit of cast in there to bring it right into life about person-centered planning.
Yeah, and it's really like, you know, finally someone playing a disabled character and being true to, like, disability. Like, I know so many people with disabilities that like to go out and party and drink and have fun. Like, so I thought it was really, yeah, true to form, true to disability.
Okay, well, let's have a little chat about this. As far as going out partying and actually having the teenage experiences.
Mm.
Now, I've got a disability and I'm quite open about this. One, it's kind of like quite often a parent might try to wrap people up in cotton wool and protect them from the real life experiences. What do you think?
I agree with that. I've met a lot of people along the way that have parents that are like that. And my friends and I have, you know, kind of taken that person under our wing and taken them out to, you know, see bands or, you know, festivals, nightclubs, just nightlife, really. There's so many people with disabilities that don't get to experience nightlife.
Well, that's very, very, very true. And as far as the Angus Project goes, is that Angus is one of those really cool dudes, likes to party a lot.
Yeah.
And I mean a lot. And that's actually really good from a disability point of view to actually bring something like this onto ABC comedy and actually have an authentic character just going to have those experiences, which quite often a person may not actually have.
Mm, exactly, yeah. And, you know, in the show, he's clearly got lots of friends, and that's what happens when you go out and you meet people when you go out. So, you know, it's kind of a good positive, you know, thing for parents to watch, to be like, oh, you know, my kids could go out and have fun and still be safe because they'll be around a good group of people. You know, if they make good group of friends, then you feel a bit more safe because you've got people out there looking out for you.
Well, again, that's very, very true. Is that it's almost like I describe it as the disability cycle.
Mm.
Have a disability, who then is a carer, or how do you actually break that? Well, if the person isn't going out and actually trying to get experiences such as having a job or the social life, pushing those edges, I mean, if I want to go back to, I think it was 2012, I did find a lady who was a wheelchair user and she had gone parachuting, I should say.
Oh, my goodness.
And I got her into the studio and that was a pretty wild interview. That's going back about six and a half years ago. But this is on how people actually develop the circle of friends that a character like Angus would actually have.
Mm.
Like another part about the Angus Project is in the community, or what I call the neurotypical world,
yeah,
and that tells a little bit about the disability I've got, that people actually have got heroes. Do you reckon that Angus had any heroes?
I reckon so. Surely he would have to have heroes. I reckon he'll probably be a hero for some people watching it. He's going to, you know, a new generation of disabled people are going to watch this and be like, he's totally my hero. But, I would say he'd have to have heroes. He'd have to have had, you know, really supportive parents that let him go out and do things, let him go to school, you know, not put him up and, you know, bundled him up in cotton wool, like you said before. So, yeah, I definitely would say he'd have heroes.
Well, as a person with a disability, like in the Angus Project, one of Angus's big heroes was a guy called Whizzer. Whizzer was a Paralympian. Do you remember Whizzer?
No. What did he play?
He was that really cool, really cool-looking dude. He had charisma, he had the looks, and won gold medal, so a motivational speaker. The world loves him.
Yeah.
And it comes to private life, complete prick, as soon as it's outside the air. And there's that confrontation between Angus and his hero, Whizzer, about you can't say that, that's not right what you're doing, Whizzer. And the way that it's actually handled there is that not all people with a disability are friendly.
Yeah.
The vast majority are friendly and very, very can be very social. But, like, there's a mixed bag of people too. Yeah,
that's so true. To say people can be dicks, it's true.
Yeah, and it's kind of... You go.
I was going to say, I think I haven't watched all the episodes of The Angus Project because I've only watched three and I managed to not watch them in order either. I managed to watch the third one first and the second one and then the first one. It was just completely out of order, but I still loved it.
Well, look, is that, again, that's actually not a bad way to actually do things because at least you know where it's going, where it was actually ending, where it may go, and actually work back and reconstruct the storyline and then come up with the wisdom of hindsight about what the storyline might have been.
Yeah. So was there more than three episodes or is it just the three?
No, so I've only been able to find three episodes on iView.
Yeah.
And at this stage, three episodes. But look, it's that The Angus Project is part of the Fresh Blood series.
Mm.
Now, when the powers to be decide what show they were going to pick up, what is the case for The Angus Project to get be made into a big TV series? What do you think?
I think we need to share it, tell everyone that we know about it to get them to watch it. We should write into, is it Bad Blood?
No. It's called the Fresh Blood. ABC.
Yeah, we've got to write into them. We've got to make it known that it's a really good show and it needs to be properly on TV and have a proper season.
Well, look, is that there's other ways people can actually go through and promote and talk about The Angus Project. The Angus Project is on Facebook. If you type The Angus Project into Facebook, it comes up and there's a place where a person can write a review. Now, that's one way of actually showing more people could actually watch it. Do you think you might be able to write a review for it, Rosie?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to do that as soon as I get home today. Definitely.
Well, look, as I have written a review about The Angus Project, I was totally taken by it.
Mm.
And part of the Around the Brologist dream this year was to actually go behind the scenes, and I was fortunate enough to come across The Angus Project, which is about a person called Angus with a disability, played by a person with a disability. And as part of this series, so far I've been able to speak with Nina Oyama, who plays the carer, Angus Thompson, who plays Angus, and I've spoken to Adam Bowles, who plays Whizzer, and Melina Wicks, who is one of the writers. And we're having a very good chat about where it should actually go. Now, is that one of the things that comes to the side of my head, that a big hot topic in the sporting world is the one which about drugs, illegal drugs and steroids. What do you think of the idea of having a character like Whizzer who goes out and says to Angus, well, look, if this is what you're going to do, if you want to really help me out, you need to go and get me some steroids. What, do you remember that little scene there?
No, I think I've missed that episode. I don't think I've seen it. Is because I swear I've seen three episodes, but I don't remember Whizzer. So maybe there's like a fourth one or something that I didn't see.
Right. Well, it's that there might be, but is it okay, let's say if you actually met one of your heroes, how would you feel if you had this person who had been the Paralympian, the pin-up person in the world, and they actually told you that they were committing illegal acts to get this competitive advantage? What would you think?
I think I'd be very shocked and a little bit horrified. But that's me and my personality. I think I wouldn't know what to do.
Well, look, it is an ethical dilemma question.
Mm.
However, from a disability point of view there, that I think that's a really good issue to actually bring into an episode about the moral dilemma, the ethical question of what actually happens there. Is the disability world exempt from the rules of outside community because they have a disability, or should the rules apply equally?
It's a good question.
It's difficult, that question, that one too. That one of the things I've also come across too is that because this series is really about entertainment and disability, one of the most amazing facts that I have come across is that if you have got a disability and there's an opportunity to go overseas to get further training or for career development, there is major restrictions on what you can do. Is that if you happen to overstay, I think it's about 4 weeks, the disability pension is cut off completely.
Yeah, I've heard about this.
And that then you have to reapply. I think it's then a suspension, and it's basically do as your own risk. And furthermore, but what's this got to do with the Angus project? If you've got a, let's say, a show about disability and they would like to make this into a major film, let's say Hollywood, and it's going to be across there for 6 months, and if a person had a disability and they were across there to get the experience there at a different rate, is that the pension is taking disability support pension, the support income to ensure that they've got maybe minimal income. They're going to actually lose it, reapply. That means there's a good chance there won't be any income coming being when they come back to Australia. Yet the contrast is that if a person is a Paralympian, they actually have got an exemption. They can go overseas, but a disability entertainer can't go overseas. They've actually got to start the whole process again.
I did not know that. I did not know that the Paralympians were exempt from
playing. It is the Paralympians that if you are going to represent Australia, you can get an exemption.
Wow.
If you have got a disability and going over there to improve Australia's cultural experience, you are not exempt. That's insane.
Yeah.
And furthermore, there's no Centrelink that can go through and actually make a decision. And apparently it's at least 3 to 6 months before they'll even start reviewing or looking at the case.
Yeah, that's crazy. And it'd be so, you know, kind of heartbreaking to, you know, go overseas to, you know, make this show and then come back to find you've got no money and that you have to, like, you know, reapply and wait, you know, probably months just to, like, get money again.
Well, it's going to be, it's a little bit more serious than that. From the perspective that I see it.
Yeah.
Because in the wider perspective, that I think that the federal government is appearing for a push to everyone to have paid employment in some description. However, in disability and entertainment, it's actually one of those things that there is a bigger market that is actually overseas to generate the income, to actually get the credibility across there. And as far as people with a disability do go, in terms of person-centred planning, part of it with the Angus project, Angus does go to a newspaper's office in Bathurst to become a sporting journalist. Now, those sort of professions, if you've got a disability and say, I would like to become an artist, a radio announcer, an actress or an actor, or maybe I'd like to become, let's say, a model or a photographer, which are actually very good creative pathways for a person with a disability, because a lot of those people end up who are self-employed, they've actually got the freedom to actually work out a routine that is actually going to, one, keep them well, generate an income and have the freedom to work what they can do, as opposed to working, let's say, a 9-to-5 job. I mean, what's your experience? I mean, is that if you're looking for work, what would be your experience, Rosie?
Well, at the moment, I am looking for work. My goal for this year is to get a paid job. So my experiences have been trying to contact Centrelink to say, hey, I would like to join a job agency. You know, can you help me with that? So, of course, you wait like 2 hours on the phone. Then they say someone will call you back. And then they call you back when you're at the gym or when you can't answer the phone. And they leave a message saying, call Centrelink back. And then you think, oh, my goodness, this is ridiculous. So I've almost given up the hope with that, but maybe this year I'll try it again. And I've, you know, I just look for things that are kind of disability related in the way of like disability advocacy work or, you know, things, jobs that involve needing, you know, lived experience with a disability is what I'm trying to get. So, but a lot of the times I get things like, oh, you don't know enough about the NDIS because I'm not currently on the NDIS, or, you know, you're not the right fit or something. So, yeah, I'm really struggling to get a job at the moment.
Well, is it one of the things that you brought up that to get those sort of experiences, that this might be a direction that the Angus Project may actually go into, is when or if or when the Angus Project becomes the major TV series that it actually really deserves to become, yeah, and it really should come a major smash hit. I think the Angus Project, it may end up like with a cult following something like the Young Ones in the 1980s, and it'll come absolutely huge because it sets a new standard. And it's actually very Australian humour the whole way, yeah, through it, politically incorrect and a lot of other things. Mm. As I can just imagine that Australia becoming a world leader and having a TV series where, let's say, 80% of the characters have got a disability on mainstream TV, and actually developing the little bylines, this could actually be maybe the new Home and Away or Neighbours. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I would definitely watch it religiously, like I used to Home and Away back in the day. For sure. I think it's fantastic, and I think everyone should go check it out. Find the episode that I have not yet watched.
And look, it's the Angus Project, is that it is available to watch on iView.
Mm.
If you Google iView, a series comes up called Fresh Blood, and there are other shows that have been on Fresh Blood. The Angus Project is one of them. Another one is called The Koala Man. But from a disability point of view, that if I was going to be making mainstream media, this is the way I would be approaching it.
Mm.
And I like to preempt things, what everybody does, because having Asperger's syndrome, I know everything, just ask me. The reality is that in Australia, that 20% of the population does have a disability. Now, I put it to you this way. If I was in the media, which I should be,
yeah,
that Australia's got a population of 25 million. If 20% of those people have got a disability, you were looking at 5 million people there, and 5 million people, if you were all watching that, you have actually got major advertising and sponsorship advertising opportunities there to open up the whole world and a new generated, almost guaranteed audience, especially if you talked around the whole spectrum of disabilities, ranging from the invisible disabilities, and 90% of disabilities are invisible,
yep,
10% are visible, where they might be the walking aids, it might be a person using a wheelchair, it might be a person with a guide dog. It's called Reality City. There is huge potential for something like that to actually take off. What do you reckon, Rosie?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly, definitely.
And what are your final thoughts? What would be the best outcome you can see for the Angus Project?
I think the best outcome is that it actually, you know, gets popular. I think the best thing would be for people to notice it, to watch it, and, yeah, like you said, make it really popular, like Home and Away. Make it a regular TV show.
Look, I agree with you with this one, is that one of the things that having a disability, what it does teach, what my experience is, it teaches people a lot about resilience.
Mm.
What has that got to do with entertainment, the Angus Project? For a person to become successful in any type of entertainment, it comes down to three things: timing, tenacity, and talent. And part of having a disability is develop resilience. And entertainment, you actually need a huge amount of resilience, the perseverance, and the courage to keep going. And that's where people with a disability, it's almost an ideal fit for people to join together.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Rosie, for your time.
Thank you for having me.
My name is Rafael Kalb. I was speaking with Melena Wicks and Rosie as a special guest talking about the Angus Project. Keep listening to Tim Tams, who is going to be hosted by Rosie and Stella Barton. This is 3CR, and I'll be back on the 10th of December, or 10th of January, with the last episode of A Rambling Barologist Dream, talking about the Angus Project. Thank you very much. And we're going to take a community announcement now.